This episode of the Mighty Parenting Podcast is sponsored by The Great Courses Plus. I can tell that my youngest daughter has been in our Great Courses Plus account. I went in the other day to watch something, and I saw that our queue had expanded. And then I saw that Great Orchestral Works, Understanding Opera, The History of Christmas Concert Music were all in the queue. Definitely my baby adding that. But I also saw that the Instant Sommelier and the World's Greatest Churches were in there, and I was excited because those are things that I would sit down and watch with her and we can enjoy them together. And that's what I really love about the Great Courses Plus. There's something for everyone and also things that we can enjoy together. The professors are great, so I know we'll learn a lot from carefully selected experts. But you know what? Just check it out yourself. The Great Courses Plus is offering Mighty Parents 30 days for free. So sign up today using my special URL to take advantage of this limited time deal. Just go to thegreatcoursesplus.com/mightyparenting. That's thegreatcoursesplus.com/mightyparenting to start your free trial today. And then let me know what you think. Let me know what you're watching and how your family enjoyed it. I'd love to hear your feedback. This episode of the Mighty Parenting Podcast is sponsored by SaveTheChildren.org. Save the Children believes that every child deserves to have a future, and in the United States and around the world, they are working every day to give children a healthy start in life, the opportunity to learn, and to be protected from harm. They deliver lasting results for millions of children, including those who are hardest to reach. They do whatever it takes for children, every day, and in times of crisis, transforming their lives in the future we share. Right now, coronavirus is the biggest global health crisis of our lifetime, and it threatens children in every way. COVID-19 has already left many children without caregivers, out of school, and exposed to violence and exploitation. Child poverty is rising during this time. With your support, we can help children in unsafe households and help support distance learning in the face of school closures. So here are some ways that our support can make a difference. We can donate anywhere from $5 to $50 and help vulnerable children. Just a couple of ways that that can help is as little as $5 can provide a nutritious breakfast and lunch for a child who usually relies on school for their food. And donation of $50 can deliver essentials that keep kids learning while they're out of school, things like books and activities and supplies. And there are many more ways that our small contributions can come together to help these children. If you'd like to learn more or make a donation, go to savethechildren.org/savekids. That's www.savethechildren.org/savekids.
Welcome to Mighty Parenting, the podcast with real, raw, and relevant talk about raising teens and parenting young adults.
Welcome to Mighty Parenting, a community where we help you raise teens and parent 20-somethings so they can become happy, successful, and emotionally healthy adults. I'm your host, Sandy Fowler, and I want to thank you for showing up. For showing up for your kids, for showing up for yourself, and for showing up for the community. If you're finding value in the podcast, then would you please rate and review it and also share it? Podcast players are all different, but they all have a sharing icon. So if you would share it with friends or on social media, that would be great because that's how other parents find us so that they can get this information too. And I know there's still a lot of people who don't really know what podcasts are or how they work, but we got you covered there. If you have friends who aren't really familiar with podcasts, feel free to show them your favorite podcast app and how that works, or you can just send them to mightyparenting.com. They can click on podcasts in the menu, and then each show has its own page, and there is a player built right in there, so they can listen right on the website. Easy peasy. And today we're going to talk about something that really isn't so easy peasy. We are going to be talking about our kids and their self-confidence. I hear stories that kind of scare me, you know, things like a 20-something gets out in the workforce and their boss gives them some constructive criticism and they quit their job. To me, that's a lack of self-confidence and a lack of resiliency. And I hear stories about kids not wanting to try things. And that makes me nervous. And I watch my kids, I watch their friends, I watch kids in the neighborhood, and I see things that make me sad as a parent. And so I figure, hey, there's something we can do about this. And today we have a great expert to help us do something about this. We have Dr. Melanie McNally here with us today, and she is going to talk to us about self-confidence in our teens and how we can help them build that in a healthy way. And Dr. McNally definitely knows how to go about doing this because she provides online support through teletherapy, virtual groups, private online communities, courses, and books that are all aimed at teaching teens and young adults how to manage stress and anxiety, develop coping tools, and learn how to like themselves, flaws and all. So today she's going to help us understand what's happening and how we can support our kids. Melanie, welcome to Mighty Parenting.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
So Melanie, I have my thoughts about self-confidence and some of those things. You are the one who actually knows what's going on here. So what is it, you know, when we talked about what we should discuss about our kids, that was one of the things you said, is we need to talk about how to build their self-confidence. And I'm curious what it is that makes you say that that's a problem for our kids.
Yeah, so, you know, I often see teens and young adults who are completely unprepared to take risks, and they are terrified to do so. They also really struggle to go outside their comfort zone. And that can be in little ways or in really big ways. So kids and, you know, teens who are afraid to raise their hand in class, who don't want to sign up for something like a school audition for a play. They don't want to try out for a team because they're so afraid of failure. And then I often see parents who support that by overprotection. So they either are buffering them so much that they're making failure really difficult for them because they're putting so many supports in place, or they're discouraging them from doing something because they know it may not work out for their teen or young adult. So they just kind of push them, you know, encourage them not to even try to begin with because they're afraid that it might somehow affect future jobs or college applications. And because going outside our comfort zone and taking risks are such fundamental parts of building healthy self-confidence, these individuals are missing out on these key steps.
So it really becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy if we protect them and protect them and protect them until they're adults. And then at the adult level, they don't have the skills to deal with things, so they fail. And at that point, the stakes are bigger. I mean, the older they get, the bigger the stakes are. And so the parents go, see, I was right. I needed to protect them because look what happens.
Absolutely. And even, you know, you bring up an important step because, or an important point, because the stakes do get bigger. And so if they are not learning how to deal with hard things until, you know, they're off on their own at college, and now all of a sudden they have to approach the professor, or they have to deal with a difficult, you know, a difficult situation. Maybe they got a lower grade than they anticipated, or something came up that took them out of school for a couple of days. They don't know how to approach these situations at all. And I'll even see parents stepping in at the college level. So I'll see parents emailing their professors on their behalf or providing their child with a script. And so again, they're not allowing them to try these things out on their own because they're, you know, and that sends a message, that sends a really strong message of, I don't think you're capable to handle these difficult things. And kids, you know, teens, young adults, they internalize that message. And so even if it's not said out loud that I don't think you're capable, it's said indirectly by doing it for them. And so they internalize that message and they will carry that with them for a really long time.
Interesting. So when we talk about this, what I'm wondering is, when we were kids, when our parents were kids, I mean, kids have always been afraid to raise their hand in class or afraid to try out for something. Is it actually different now? And if so, how do you know that it's more or different than what it's been in the past?
You know, that's a tough question because I don't know if it is different. I don't know if I could say with certainty that, you know, it's harder for kids to do certain things or it's different, but it does seem like the stakes or the perceived stakes have gotten a lot higher. And so there's a lot more pressure. And so even before, if we had the same fears as kids, we may not have had that additional pressure put on us. So for example, with college applications now, there's so much. I mean, when I was applying for colleges, we didn't have a special advisor at our school to help us with the application process. There was no requirement as to how many schools I had to apply to. You know, it was a much simpler process. And now kids have special advisors in the communities that I work. Some of the kids are even being, the parents are hiring an additional outside advisor to help them with the application process. And they are required to, even schools are requiring them to apply to a minimum amount of, you know, 6 to 8 schools at, you know, for colleges. So there's this extra pressure. And so I think that extra pressure adds to them not wanting to go outside their comfort zone or not wanting to take a risk. And so again, it's not that maybe it's different for one or the other, but there does seem to be more pressure.
Well, now that you say that, and I start thinking back, I can see some of those changes too. I know when we were in school, we took the ACT or the SAT once. I mean, some kids, if they'd had a really bad day, or maybe they're a student who struggles with tests, maybe they took it a second time. But we certainly, at least not in my circles, you know, middle class America, it was not the norm to take a prep class and take practice tests and to prepare for that. Same thing with sports. Mm-hmm. That was kind of a surprise to me, because my kids weren't interested in sports when they were younger. And so when they got to be tweens and they went, you know, I might like to try this, it was already too late. Mm-hmm. Because you weren't good enough, because you hadn't been doing it. And you're right. So those are definitely, I guess, I was going to say mile markers, but that's not exactly the word. I just can't think of the word I want. But, you know, those are definitely things that we can look at and go, wow, yeah, that is definitely different when I was a kid. The expectations are higher across the board on things that you need to be better, do more, and that kind of thing. And so it follows logically that that would create more pressure for our kids. Do you think that that's what's creating more pressure for parents too? Maybe pushing us to be, we've heard the terms, helicopter parent, lawnmower parent, snowplow parent, you know, but to basically be over involved.
Yeah. And, you know, and I do not want to diss parents or anything like that, because I know that parents, the parents that I've worked with over the years, they have really great intentions. They want what's best for their kids, and they're doing the best that they can. And so I'm not trying to diss any of these parents whatsoever. But I do think that there are a lot of additional pressures put on parents too, because like you mentioned, with sports. And so when parents see these other kids doing all these additional practices and participating, then they feel pressure that they should be doing that too. Or they're seeing on social media, you know, that their friends' kids are excelling in all these different areas. And now they might start to feel their own insecurity pop up, or their own, you know, like feeling like a failure as a parent because their own child isn't excelling in the same ways. And if they're not aware of those feelings going on inside of them, then they're likely to now project that onto their child and to want their child to excel so that they can show, you know, show it off on social media, or they can brag about it at the next family get together. And it's not really about the child's interests or development, but it's more about their own internal needs.
And that's interesting to me, because what I see there happening to parents then is kind of, we get a double whammy. Now, here in the Mighty Parenting community, we know we're out there and we're doing our best and we're going to make mistakes, and all of those difficulties are worth going through to not only make things better for our kids, but for ourselves as well. And here's an area where I see that we kind of get double slammed. As you were talking about, there is our own insecurity, fear, our own worry that we're failing in and of ourselves in what we do or didn't do. And then when you take that concern and worry that's natural for a parent, you know, we want our kids to have a good life. We want them to be happy. We want them to enjoy what they're doing. We want them to be good people. We want all these things for them. And putting those two things together, worry about ourselves and worry about our kids, it's a heavy weight, and it's a lot to manage or to fight against.
Absolutely. And it's, you know, I always encourage the parents that I work with to extend their social circles to others who maybe, to friends who don't have kids, or to be honest with their friends who also are parents about what they're struggling with, because most likely they'll find that their friends are struggling with the same things, and that maybe their kids are dealing with the same issues, but what people are posting or what people are sharing are really the highlight reels. And so just to try and end that cycle, you know, don't get caught up in it. And so if parents are finding that when they look on Facebook and, you know, they're seeing all their friends, especially during college acceptance season, you know, and they're seeing friends posting where their, you know, their kids are going to schools, they may need to take a break from social media during that time just to protect themselves a little bit so that they don't get caught up in it themselves, and then they don't project that onto their children. And then to be honest with their friends, like I was saying, share what their struggles are, to open up that line of communication, because most often other people are feeling the exact same way, but people usually don't want to be the first one to admit that. And so if they admit it, then they might open it up and find that, oh my gosh, you know, I can't believe so many of my friends feel the same thing. And then that will ease the burden a little bit themselves, or take the burden off themselves a little bit.
It absolutely makes sense. And even in real life, you mentioned social media is one place. I know that high school graduation parties are another place that there is a lot of pressure. What are your plans? What are you going to be doing? Where are you going? It seems to have changed from celebrating an accomplishment to measuring people and, I guess, judging their futures. I don't like that, but it's another place that I think we can kind of be aware of some of these things that you said, and to, as a family, talk about, you know, what we're doing and what our values are and what's important to us and why we're making the choices we're making, which are the best choices for us. I know we had some very different conversations with our kids about future employment. And one, we didn't push them to go to college, although they both made that choice. And two, as they're finishing up and going forward, we said, don't just accept every promotion offered to you. If you like your work and you like what you're doing, make sure you understand exactly what the new job will be, because we know people, my husband included, who got promoted right out of all of his happiness. Mm-hmm. If he would have just turned down like his last three promotions, he would have been very happy in his job. Mm-hmm. But there's that mindset of achieve, 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 as you were kind of talking about before. So as parents, we want to help our kids. We want to support our kids. You've said that overhelping, that helping in particular ways sends them the message that we think they can't do it. So what is the difference between help and support? What might that look like for us as parents? How can we be there for them without overdoing and actually support that self-confidence?
Yeah, so, and that's a really good question, because we want the support to look like gentle guidance, but without intrusion. And sometimes that can be really challenging, because we might see them making all kinds of errors. And you might be able, as a parent, you can probably predict what's going to happen and why it went wrong. But it's really important for them to learn those lessons themselves. And so to allow them to make mistakes and to encourage them to do things that are outside their comfort zone. But then if they don't want to just ask some questions to build their self-awareness a little bit. You know, why is this hard for you to do? Or what's holding you back from trying this thing? But doing it in a way where it's not intrusive. So the parent isn't telling them, you know, you need to do this because of this reason, or you're always afraid to try new things, or you're always afraid whenever you have to talk in front of a group. So we don't want to use that accusatory or blaming or shaming kind of language, but instead just ask open-ended questions to get them thinking about their own abilities and skills so that they can build self-awareness. And then to just gently, you know, guide. And a lot of gentle guidance actually occurs through modeling healthy behaviors ourselves. So parents need to be willing to go outside their own comfort zone. You know, parents need to be willing to take risks and to fail and to try again. You know, like a parent who is willing to sign up for the marathon and train for it, even though maybe they're not really a runner. That's a great example to a young person of a parent going outside their comfort zone, or, you know, taking a risk. So modeling those healthy behaviors too, because really so much of what teens and young adults and kids are picking up on is the nonverbal stuff. It's not necessarily what parents are saying, it's what they're doing.
It's funny that you talked about that. It's been quite a while now. It's probably been over a year, maybe even two. Judy Davis, who started the podcast with me, who founded Mighty Parenting with me, we were talking about that at one point, because it's been a long, long time since we decided to step outside of our comfort zones and start our own business and work with people. And when we first started, it was so hard, and there were tears, and there was frustration, and there was all this stuff going on. But then we created a new normal and a bigger comfort zone. And like I said, some time ago, it dawned on me that it had been several years since I had done anything significantly outside my comfort zone. Sure, there are little things, but something really significant. And I think that when I saw that, and when I started taking more steps outside my comfort zone, I think it is something that my kids saw and noticed, because in their time, a few years is a lot of time. I mean, if we don't do something outside our comfort zone for 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 years, even though we know we made a huge shift way back when, it's not anything to them. They were little. They don't really remember what it was like before that.
Right. Absolutely. And, you know, and even, even like little things like practicing self-care. I mean, that's a really important step to having healthy self-confidence. You know, if you think of self-care as like sleep and eating fairly healthy most of the time and, you know, being social and moving our bodies and taking breaks when we need to, those are really important parts of self-confidence, because if we don't have good self-care, like foundational pieces in place, we're more likely to be sad, anxious, stressed out, irritable. And that is a total confidence killer. And oftentimes, you know, parents themselves aren't practicing that good self-care. And then teens and young adults see that. So then they think, you know, oh, it's okay to push my sleep back a little bit tonight and to work later into the night, you know, because I see mom doing that when she's preparing for a big presentation. Or it's okay to just, you know, be throwing a bunch of just snacks in my mouth all day and not really eating any meals, because that's what I see dad doing on the weekends when he's in the middle of preparing for something. So even modeling just that self-care element is really important for teens and young adults to see.
So when it comes to helping our kids build their self-esteem, are there other things that we can do? So you've said we need to step outside our comfort zones, stop doing for them, encourage them to step outside their comfort zones, do some self-care and encourage and support them in taking care of themselves. Mm-hmm. Are there other things that can help?
Well, I think, you know, like I was saying, modeling healthy behaviors yourself. So as a parent, making sure that you're modeling really healthy ways of caring for yourself, and that, you know, parents are working on their own self-awareness. That's really, really important. And then to help teens and young adults build their self-awareness. So asking those open-ended questions, you know, asking things in a way where it's not, you know, the shaming language, and it's not blaming or critical, but just open-ended questions like, why don't you think that worked out? Or what would you do different next time if you were to try that again? Or why do you think that was so upsetting for you? So that they have to identify these reasons themselves, instead of parents putting, you know, those words into their kids' mouths and telling them this is how they should do it differently next time, this is why it didn't work out. Because kids, you know, teens, young adults are much more hands-on learners, you know, so they're going to be much better prepared for the future when they've tried things themselves, when they've learned on their own, as opposed to somebody just lecturing it all at them and telling them how things are.
That alone is a skill set. I think that is a skill that takes time for us as parents to learn. We need to really practice it, especially because when we first start parenting, when they're little, they have no ability to deal with open-ended questions. It's all us laying things out there for them so they can start learning what options are, or going, do you want the blue one or the red one? There aren't these open-ended questions. And so to make that change, I think it's a challenge for us.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a challenge, I'm sure, but it's also so necessary, because what I've seen is that when parents aren't able to do that, and so instead, when parents tend to tell, you know, young people how things are, tell them where they made the mistakes, when they are kind of dictating at them and correcting them all the time, all that does is it causes teens, especially teens, to just stop sharing. Because they learn that, oh, if I share this with mom or dad, they're just going to tell me what I did wrong, or they're just going to tell me how I need to do things differently. and they're not going to, they're just going to stop sharing information. And so to really try and avoid that temptation, no matter how easy it is, because I'm, you know, there's times when teens share things with me and I want to jump in there and be like, oh my God, why did you do that? What were you thinking? But I have to really just kind of bite my tongue. I just take a nice, you know, deep, slow breath in and pause. And a lot of times that pause is enough of an opening for them to continue. Because I've learned too that oftentimes when teens start sharing information with us, they're testing out the waters a little bit. So they might share something that sounds really insignificant. They might share like an interaction with a teacher, or they might mention that there's a school play coming up or auditions. And what they're actually doing is they're testing the waters to see how the adult in their life is going to react. And if we react in a very open-minded way and just ask an open-ended question about it, they'll share more. But if we, you know, offer judgment or telling them what they should do, then we're just kind of shutting them down and they're not going to share what they really wanted to share with us.
That is very interesting. I've shared on the show before, one of my girls hit a point in college where she was having panic attacks and she was home. I think it was Christmas break. She was home. And there was a day where she had not told us that she was having panic attacks. And there was a day where she experienced one. She and I were the only ones home. I happened to come across her right at the end of it. And it unfolded into this entire evening. But for whatever reason, in that moment, I had the presence of mind to be calm. And as you said, just ask. I probably just asked something very, you know, one very simple question. And I kind of let it sit. And then a little while later, we're both in the kitchen. And it was like you said, you know, she said something. And honestly, inside my head, I was so freaked out that I just didn't even know what to do or say or where to go. It was all so new to me at that point. This was years ago. And I didn't have the knowledge and the resources and things that I have now. So I was very quiet, partly just because I was thinking, like, what can we do about this? I have no idea what to do about this. And at some point, I did say, you know, I have no idea what to do to fix this. And I'm sorry that you're experiencing this, but I'm here for you and I will help you figure it out. And that was like one of only maybe three things that I actually said. But what you said is so true. She kind of said something and I had a response, which a lot of my response was silence in that day, but it was sort of dribbled out for a little bit. And then all of a sudden the dam broke. Mm-hmm. And she just talked and talked and paced the kitchen and talked and talked and talked. And it probably went on for a couple of hours. And you know, I just sat and listened, but I had not realized that she was testing the waters.
Yeah. And your response was so perfect.
By accident.
And that is, but that's the perfect example though of what parents can say when, like you, where they're kind of backed into a corner or they just don't know how to respond or are completely freaked out internally or, you know, feeling really nervous or anxious themselves, to just say, you know, I don't know how to respond to this, or I don't know how to fix this for you, but I'm here with you. You know, and that is enough, because so often when teens and young adults share with us, they're usually, like 99% of the time, they're not looking to us to fix anything. They actually don't want us to fix things. They want to figure it out on their own. And when we go into that problem solving mode, we're just kind of shutting them down, and we're missing out on a really great opportunity to learn more about the way they work internally, to get to know what their interests are and what drives and motivates them. And, you know, and then, like I said, then they're just kind of learning, okay, that's a topic that's off limits with mom. So that your response was wonderful. Good job.
Well, like I said, a lot of it was just by accident, but it fit to what you said. And there was a point there where she did it earlier in the conversation after she dropped a couple things. And she looked at me and she said point blank in confusion, she looked at me and said, "You're not freaking out." And I think that was when I said, "No, I said, you know, I'm not happy that you're going through this. I feel bad that you're going through it. But there's nothing to freak out about. It's just something we have to understand and learn about and figure out how to move forward through it." Mm-hmm. But I've also gone the other way, because also here, when you talk about, yes, you know, kids don't want you to fix it. And my kids have been training me through high school and college years. They will actually look at me as soon as I start talking in certain circumstances and go, "Let it go, mom," or "I don't need your help," or "I've got this." And they'll just tell me, and I've told them they can do that. And I'm like, "You're right. Sorry about that." But I think that permission too lets them know, I mean, if we actually literally tell them, tell me if I'm wrong about this, but I'm thinking if we say, "Hey, I love you. I care about you. I want your life to be great. So I know that sometimes when you tell me about a problem, I jump in and start solving it. You can feel free to shut me down." Does that then send the message that, yeah, I know you can handle this. I make mistakes out of concern.
Yeah, no, that's a great way to approach it. And I'll even encourage the teens and young adults that I work with to even themselves to just to advocate for themselves. So before they share something, to even say, you know, "Hey, mom, I'm going to share something with you. I'm not looking for problem solving. I'm not looking for you to fix anything. I just need you to listen." And so when they actually take ownership of what they need, and then, you know, and then when the parent's respectful and when the parent is able to truly do that, to just listen and to not go into problem solving or blaming mode or anything like that, then that's a really healthy relationship dynamic. And if the teen or young adult isn't quite able to do that themselves, then that's great for the parent to flip it around and do what, you know, what you suggested, and to say, "Hey, you know I tend to problem solve. Just feel free to tell me. Nope, I just need you to listen right now." And then the idea is that eventually they should be able to do that themselves and let you know what they need.
And that is a very adult relationship. That's what my husband and I do with each other. Mm-hmm. Is we'll say, "I'm just venting," or I think out loud. So I'll be like, "I'm just thinking out loud." Or he'll be like, "I'm just sorting something." And so then the other person knows to keep their trap shut and not to offer advice or make suggestions, because as human beings, we oftentimes are just not looking for that. And so I do think that that's a very adult thing to do with our kids, as we're shifting from that parenting to more of that coaching and guiding that you talked about in their lives.
Yeah. And, you know, and I've even had, kids as young as 11 be able to do that. So even though it is a mature communication method, you know, kids are capable of it, and they are able to identify what it is that they need or what they're looking for. And sometimes too, when they're younger, parents might even correct, you know, and so maybe if it's especially, you know, someone who's more in middle school and they're just starting to learn how to communicate in that way, they might say, "I'm just venting." And maybe that's all they ever do. Then the parent can reflect that back to them and say, you know, I definitely want to hear you out, and I want to, you know, listen, and I want to be there for you. But also, venting is only healthy to a certain extent. And so if we're always just venting, we're not really getting to the core of the issue, or we're not figuring out what we need to do about the problem. So maybe we set the timer for 2 minutes, and maybe you vent for 2 minutes. And then when the timer goes off, maybe we'll switch to problem solving mode. and we'll do that together. And so that way it's just not creating a dynamic of them always venting.
I love that, because that is one of the, I'm going to use the word mistakes, but I think it is a mistake that as a culture we make and we encourage as a culture, is this idea of just venting and venting and venting. And yes, sometimes we do. We just need to get something off our chest, but venting shouldn't be what we're doing over and over and over again about the same situation. And as you said, not going on and on and on. So I'm going to go back and just see if I can kind of hit a few of the high points of things that you told us to help us kind of cement in our minds as parents what's going on here. So we have a lot of teens and young adults who are completely unprepared to take risks. They're struggling to go outside their comfort zone. They're afraid to try things. And unfortunately, as parents, with the best of intentions, oftentimes we're part of the problem. And we encourage that situation to occur by overprotecting our kids. That can happen due to our own fears or our own issues with failure or worrying about our kids not being happy, not needing what, or not getting what they need and having the life they want. And we can make the mistake of trying to deal with those by overprotecting. And the older our kids get, the bigger the stakes are. So we really want to start as young as possible. And realizing here, we're talking tweens, teens, 20-somethings. Obviously, when our children were very little, or if we have littler ones still, we don't want to overstep the boundary there. But so as parents, how can we help build their self-esteem? One important aspect is self-care. And that is something that we as parents, the best way to teach that or to encourage our kids to do it is to be doing it ourselves, and then encourage them to join us or to notice when they're not taking care of themselves. Also, we can help them build self-esteem by building their self-awareness. And we do that through asking open-ended questions like, well, why don't you think that worked out? Or why do you think that was so upsetting for you? And not judging or blaming or shaming them, or even necessarily feeling like we answer to what they say, but just ask the question and let them ponder that and give an answer and kind of be, okay. And just be there for them. Let's see. Oh, and I love this. So I wrote down, bite our tongue, take a deep, slow breath. And that pause is often enough space for our teens to start talking to us and tell us something, because oftentimes they'll drop a little tidbit to see how we react to it. And if we can be calm and non-judgmental, then they'll start opening up, because 99% of the time they aren't looking at us to fix things. They just want to talk to us about it, or they want someone to listen and validate their feelings. Melanie, one more thing. You have your book, Counting Dragonflies. So could you quickly tell us what that is and how it might fit into the conversation we had today?
Yeah, so Counting Dragonflies is a novel about a seventh grade girl who is really dissatisfied with a lot of things in her life. And things go dramatically wrong within her family, and she doesn't have anywhere to turn. So she decides to run away to Montana to find her eccentric and artsy aunt who lives in the wilderness out there. And what I did with this novel is I really wanted to incorporate a lot of mental health habits in a very indirect way. You know, we were talking earlier about how, you know, young people tend to learn by what we do and not what we say. So that's what I was trying to incorporate with this novel. You know, she's learning how to manage stress and anxiety throughout the story, but it's built into her story. It's not like a workbook that's being told, you know, this is how you do things. She's learning about mindfulness. She's learning how to use mantras to calm herself down. She's learning how to share her feelings in a healthy way. And she's learning how to reach out and get help from others when she needs it. And so the idea is to, for teens and tweens to read this story and then to see these mental health habits in an indirect way, and to, for them to be able to start thinking of how they can incorporate some of these strategies into their own lives.
Which, if you have kids who enjoy reading at all, is a really nice way to teach them, because they certainly don't want to hear us preach at them. And I know books become part of us, so reading about something like that would be really helpful. Obviously, we do show notes, Mighty Parents, so we'll have a link to Melanie's book and her site. But Melanie, for people who would like to connect with you, would you please share how they can find you online?
Sure. So they can go to my website, which is destinationu.net. And on there, you'll see all the different online support services that I have for teens and young adults. That includes virtual groups, teletherapy, which are individualized video sessions, private online communities. You can also find my book on there as well. And if you want to reach out to me directly, you can just click the contact button on the website, and it'll reach me that way.
Great. Thank you for joining us today, Melanie, and for helping us to understand how to help build our kids' self-esteem.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. It was really fun.
Mighty Parents, thank you for being here. Remember to rate, review, and share the podcast. Also, be sure to visit mightyparenting.com and grab your free email series on how to talk to your teen. Thanks for joining us and for being part of the Mighty Parenting community. Remember, you are a mighty parent and you got this. I will see you next week.